You're listening to The Hawk, 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
Ladies and gentlemen,
good evening, everybody. Hope you've had a fantastic Tuesday, and thanks so much for hopping on here and listening to me once again. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm talking to Andy Colonico. He's the Welland-based vocalist behind classic rock group Revive the Rose and owner of Snare Guy Records. You can find Andy on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook under Andy Colonico, and Revive the Rose on all streaming services and socials as themselves. So, hey, Andy, thanks so much for talking to me.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Glad to be here over the phone.
Yeah, of course, anytime. So I guess, like, just to kind of start everything off, give a little introduction about yourself. How would you describe your style and sound?
Definitely very raw, balls to the wall, hard rock, I would say.
Okay.
But, you know, it gets diverse once in a while. It's very open. I don't know. It's just a good vibe, a good party rock, I guess. I don't know what to really call us, but we're just a good vibe, I would say.
Sure, yeah. Who are your biggest musical influences, and do you share those with the members of your band?
Yeah, we definitely share a lot of common, influences. We each, favor a few different ones, but definitely some common ones. The Foo Fighters, we love the Foos. We love April Wine. That's another good band that we look up to. We love the Trues, and yeah, Lynyrd Skynyrd, that's easily the top four, I'd say, of the boys, what we really dig.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Do you remember what you listened to as a kid, and do you think that has an impact on your current style, and do you still listen to any of those early influences?
Yeah, totally. Me, personally, I come from a completely left-field background of music. I grew up with, Broadway music, the musical soundtracks, because my mother was an actor, or she is an actor, and she does Broadway and does a lot of theater work. She's a singer.
Cool.
So I get a lot of that from her side and a lot of jazz from her side. A lot of 1950s, like the Andrews Sisters and whatnot. But anyway, I got a lot of influence on that end, and my father, he loved a lot of R&B, like funk groups like Earth, Wind and Fire, Tower of Power, Blood, Sweat and Tears, so I kind of grew up in that realm of a lot of oldies like that, and obviously he liked the Eagles and the Doobie Brothers. That was another common rock interest both my parents shared growing up. When it came, because I'm the original drummer of the band, of Revive, so when it comes to my drumming style to formate the chemistry of the band, I'm jazz and Latin trained, so I do a lot of my drum fills and whatnot. The way I structure my drum lines definitely has an impact as to how we write songs, because, like I said, I come from that background, so when I finally caved into the punk rock and rock and roll, it kind of just became this cool hybrid. So that definitely does have an impact from my growing ups. My brother, he was in the acting for a bit. And the reason why I got into punk rock was because of him. He was in the Billy Talent music video for Devil in a Midnight Mass. He was cast as the lead role. So he came home with a signed CD of their first album, and that changed my life, that CD.
Cool. Do you remember when you first kind of discovered music, when it first made an impact and you saw that and you were like, wow, I want to do that?
Yes. I remember when... So my mom, when I was a kid, she brought home, because me and my brother loved, you know, listening to goofy stuff, but she brought home an Alvin and the Chipmunks CD of them doing the Beatles. And I'm like, well, these songs are fantastic. And then all of a sudden, I'm a six-year-old in like grade one, and my aunt gives me the Red album by the Beatles, like the actual Beatles. So when I laid my hands on like the real deal, you know, I was like, wow, like I was so mind blown by the song structures and just the harmonies and everything like that. And I was really mind blown. I'm like, I found myself singing a lot after I discovered the Beatles. So that's what kind of got me into diving more into that route, which eventually led to, you know, a lot of more harder rock and roll and whatnot. But yeah, the Beatles were my first and still one of my favorite bands.
Yeah, totally. Did you start drumming first or did you start singing first?
So, I mean, I'm not really trained vocally. Like, I just started singing randomly, like in the car and whatnot. But drumming, actually, I started on piano, believe it or not. That was my first instrument I ever learned. My parents threw me and my brother into piano lessons, and I did that for about 6 years of my life, and then I witnessed some guy playing drums, like, that was in, that took the same lessons from where I took piano lessons, and I thought it was really cool. It was like electric drums. And my dad and my mom, they bought us this little Yamaha drum kit, like the, you know, like the little kid drum kits, like, like they're like you know, small.
Yeah, yeah.
Me and my dad, we would jam two piece. Like, my dad plays saxophone, so sometimes I'd be downstairs just fooling around the drum kit, and he'd be playing sax. So we would just start going to town down there, and then finally, I expressed I no longer wanted to, you know, train in piano, and then they threw me out. They bought me a drum kit for my 9th birthday. And I started in essence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. When did you start creating music? And do you remember the first song that you wrote?
Yeah. Me and my brother, we would jam all the time because my brother plays guitar too, on top of it all. So me and him would just fool around, and we had this like made up group, and we went by Doobie and Papa. That was our group name. Because
nice.
My nickname for some reason growing up was Doobie, because my parents loved the Doobie Brothers. So that was my nickname. And then and just because my brother was my older brother, I just called him Papa. Like, he was older, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
We just called ourselves Doobie and Papa. And we just made this, like, really bad CD. Like, well, not bad. Like, it was just made on a cassette. Like, you know those old cassette players that have the microphone built in? We literally, like, we recorded on that, and we made, like, a, I don't know, like a 5-track album, which I still have, and it's hung up in my room. And yeah, I remember we recorded like a whole album, just me and my brother, and it sounds terrible, but I mean, it's a start, right? So
oh yeah, it's something.
That was about 2002 or 2003, I want to say, we did that.
Wow, long time ago.
Yeah, and it was my first CD I ever burnt. My mom used to teach me how to burn CDs when I was really young. So I'd just make a bunch of mix CDs and whatnot. But then finally, we had this thing that would convert our cassettes to the computer, and then we would splice up the tracks digitally, and then we'd burn them on CDs.
Mm-hmm.
So not bad for a 7-year-old at the time, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When did you begin to look at music as something more than a hobby?
That's a great question. I honestly, like, it's just been so consistent in my life, and I always never want to do anything but play music all the time. It's never something that's like left my mind. It surrounds me all the time, and I think I always knew I wanted to do it deep down, but it was probably about when I started singing more, which was like, I remember when I first sang in front of people. It was I was in grade 11, because I had to perform in front of, for like this like assembly, because my friend Lisa was like, you sound good, because I was always doing backup vocals for my high school bands and whatnot while I was on drums. But my friend Lisa noticed, like, I really like to sing, and I would, you know, I did a decent job, and she's like, yeah, like, why don't you take a lead role for once? And so finally, for this, like, multicultural assembly in, like, grade 11, I did it, and it went over really well. People were, like, gave me good feedback and gave me the confidence to keep going. So probably around then, when I thought, because I was really nervous to sing in front of people. I don't know why I thought people would make fun of me. So when I got over that fear, I just started, like so many pictures were being painted, like, in my head. Like, you know, like, I want to sing to, like, people more. Like, I sang in front of 1,500 kids just now, in front of, like, my whole high school, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So kind of gave me that kick that I needed, I think, to really realize, all right, I want to do this. And, yeah, and then I was lucky enough to start Revive the Rose eventually a year after high school. And it was probably the most serious band I was in. We all just connected, and we all just said, we want to do this. And, like, we just kept at it, and we're still going.
Awesome. Did you study or take professional lessons?
Drumming, yes. I and piano, obviously. But, yeah, when it came to drums, I took professional lessons. My mom, my first teacher was, his name was Mark Ineo, and he actually toured with my mom when they were doing theater gigs. So that was my first in with a really awesome drum teacher. That guy is nuts. And he's done a bunch of stuff, like, after that, like, a lot of televised stuff and whatnot. But when he got a little too busy, I moved to a new teacher, and his name's Jim Caston, and he's awesome. He taught me a lot about blues and rock and roll more, and that's kind of when I started going a little more meat and potatoes on the drums. There's a very good Niagara band called LMT Connection, and their drummer, Mark Rogers, was my final teacher, and that guy is an animal. And, like, my last lesson ever, I'd say, I took bass lessons for 1 year with the Ontario Conservatory. My teacher, his name was Carmen Celli, and he taught me just kind of how to work the fretboard, because, you know, drummer to bass guitar, you know, I'm so used to being a caveman, so he just kind of translated the fretboard for me, and I just kind of took it from there by ear after that.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think was the most important lesson you took away from being taught how to play certain instruments?
Definitely what I should have done more, for drums at least, I should have kept more of a consistent practice. I always veered away from doing the simple things that like make a bigger difference in the long run. Like, you know, drummers should be practicing their rudiments, which is like, you know, practicing the types of drum rolls you do and whatnot to like a slower tempo. Like, you got to train your hands to like really be flexible. And I my left hand, it's always something that like, it could have been better, but like, I've gotten away with it, I guess. But like, yeah, definitely consistent practicing your craft. You can always get better, right? So you're never good enough. You know, you always got to be hungry to be the best mm-hmm. you can be for yourself. Right. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. How did your family and friends react to you pursuing music?
Well, my friends are all about it. I'm really lucky. I got good friends, like really supportive backbone, and they always come and party, and it's awesome. It's kind of been like a huge foundation for Revive the Rose. Like, we kind of started the band after college, like when nobody really knew what was going on with their life, and I think, I don't know, that was a good time to start it. But yeah, I've been very blessed to have friends through root the boys on, and you know, always wish for success. And my family, you know, they always want me to do what I want, but they just, you know, I remember for a while there was an argument, like, you know, where I didn't want to do college, but like, they really only pushed me to do college just so I had a plan B. You know, you always gotta play safe, right? You gotta think outside the box. But it ended up being great. I went to marketing school, and it actually really helped me fine-tune my business being the band. Like, it really helped me realized that there's things I could be doing better to grow this thing, and I met a lot of cool teachers that you know, taught me a lot, yeah, they've always been gung-ho about me doing music, and I think it's something they've always wanted to do as well, so you know, it's just kind of a common interest, and they're all about it, and yeah, very lucky. I got great family and great friends.
Awesome. What are the major ways your music has changed since you first started writing?
Well, definitely lyrically.
Sure.
Gonna throw that right off the table. I've been through a lot personally, like over the last 7 years of being in this band. you know, we were young. Like, we started this band like 17 years old. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, just moving out from home for the first time, you know, multiple breakups, like, you know, you name it, every issue, growing up, you know, just gaining new perspectives from trying out life a bit, you know. Lyrically, I definitely was able to fine-tune my lyrics better and, you know, play more maturely. And same with Pete, too. Pete helps a lot on the lyric side of things sometimes. And, yeah, we just kind of grown together as friends and just experienced a lot. So lyrically has definitely changed. And I think what's kind of, like, never really changed is this, our diversity as a band. We're not afraid to pigeon. Like, we never try to pigeonhole ourselves. We always try to, like, stand out and just do what we feels good, you know? And it just, I feel like it always, that rawness has always been there. But definitely, I don't know, just, you know, it fine-tunes over time, you know, just structure. And we got to work with a lot of cool people, like, you know, John Angus from The Trues, which you were there for those sessions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we worked with Leon from The Lazies, and just a bunch of cool people we've met over time to give us feedback, like, that are professionals. So we've definitely learned how to trim a lot of fat off some songwriting and, you know, make more of a bop, I guess, you know?
Yeah, totally, yeah. Did you grow up in Welland?
I personally grew up in Welland, and Pete did as well. I'm actually, funny, me and Matt are only a day apart birthwise, and we were born in the same hospital.
Weird.
So we were, like, down the hall from each other.
Mm-hmm. Why stick around in Welland? Why not kind of branch out and move somewhere else?
There's one thing I realized is that Niagara is a beautiful town, like a beautiful region to live in. We're very lucky here in Niagara. And it's very close to everything. It's close to America. It's close to Toronto. I've got no reason to move out, really. Like, if I gotta go to Toronto and do my thing, I will. I love it. It's true. And I kind of like keeping, you know, the bigger city a thrill more. Like, I don't want to live in the big city, I feel like. I like kind of, you know, making it a little vacay business trip, you know, sometimes. Or, like, going to a show, it's like a whole day, like a little road trip, you know. So I kind of like the thrill of it, and I like coming back to my good small town, you know, and keeping grounded over here. And we're very lucky with all the space we have down here to jam, and, you know, we can have a lot of bonfires down here. I like the whole small town feel. Mm-hmm. I guess.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is special about Welland or Niagara's music scene?
Well, I'll tell you, Welland doesn't have much of a music scene, but there's a lot of talented people in Welland, and a lot of them are starting to sprout again. What's cool about our band name in Welland is that Welland used to have one of the biggest Ontario punk rock scenes in the early days, and it was called Bro City Hardcore. So that's what our name is about, because we wanted to bring back, you know, we wanted to put Welland back on the map, so we're called Revive the Rose, right? Bro City.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely Niagara's got a great potential music scene. Like, it's had a lot of phases. Like, I remember the scene phase of all the pop punk bands and whatnot, and Scene Fest itself. Like, you know, St. Catharines has gone through a lot of changes over the years. But it's cool to see the entire Niagara region kind of grow over time. Like, even Niagara Falls, there's a lot of great musicians out of there. Welland, a lot of, like, Attack and Black, I don't know if you know that band, they're from Welland. And Dan Romano, he's done some remarkable things. Like, he played with City of Color for a bit during their Little Hell time. Like, he was on that album and everything. Crazy. Like, I don't know. It's just cool.
Yeah.
It's growing, though, definitely. And it's definitely nice to see people pushing the arts again. I feel there was kind of an awkward phase there for a bit, but it's really, I don't know, with the help of social media, a lot of stuff's been able to grow even bigger now, so it's cool. One thing at a time, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Who are some talented local artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
Definitely, not just saying this because I'm his manager, but there's a man from Port Colborne, Ontario, and he goes by Gravely James, and I was just completely mesmerized when I saw this guy for the first time. He's like, kind of like when you watch John Mayer solo on a guitar, and you're like, how does he do all that, and how does he sound that good at the same time, like, vocally?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, like, you're just so mind-blown when you're watching this guy, and he's a great songwriter, you know, and he writes about just genuine stuff. It's definitely more spotlight needs to be shown on Gravely James. And another very good band from Niagara that's recently formed is The Minimum Wage, another cool band. And they actually own their own PR company called From the Straight. But they're great, though. They just dropped two singles recently, and I'm all about it. Really, really cool. And they actually featured the drummer of Attack in Black on their newest one, so that was cool.
Cool, I'll look it up.
Yeah, you'll love it. It's definitely right up your alley, for sure.
Cool. Who would you say is, like, a dream collaborator of yours, and, like, totally go big on this one?
I would love to collaborate with Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters. I could pick one that, like, I would love to happen, it would be that, I think. I think it'd go really well, and I just, that band, like, the Foo Fighters mean so much to me. Like, I just, it's beyond words just how great that band is.
Yeah, oh yeah. Who's a local artist that you'd love to collaborate with?
I would love to eventually one day collaborate either with Ryan Guay from Street Pharmacy. Street Pharmacy had a cool history as well, and they're from Welland. They won the Disband Much Music show one year. I think it was 2009, I believe. And they had some cool opportunities, but they've been a big inspiration to me growing up, and I think that's just a long overdue collab. Like, he produced our first album for us, like Bar Down and all those songs. I think it'd be really cool to collaborate one day with him.
Oh yeah, totally. So your most recent single, Heartless Place, was released just last month. Can you tell me a bit about the meaning behind that song?
Yeah, totally. Actually, that one's really cool because I was able to reflect the music video to, like, when I wrote the song. Like, because the song, I wrote it originally, me and a couple buddies did, like, this acoustic tour around, you know, just a couple shows in Ontario. And I told these venues we would play song covers because, like, you know, they pay, cover gigs pay really well. So all we did was just get the three of us and just divide the cost at the time, and then we would just kind of throw our originals in with some covers so we can, like, disguise it. But my one buddy, very talented, but just very left field kind of genre compared to, like, what I think a bar crowd expects, and they literally, like, heckled him off, and it was really depressing to see because he's so good. And I just remember saying, like, what a heartless place this is. Like, this really sucks. And I remember I went to go to the bathroom, and I remember that melody for the chorus came into my head, and I was like, oh, I gotta, like, record this. So I jotted down, I just, like, whispered in my iPhone on, like, the voice app, I sang the chorus of the song, and then that was it. And I brought it home one day, and I was trying to figure out the riff, like, for the verses, but I tried to learn a song by this country band called Midland. And they have a song called Mr. Lonely. I tried to learn it because it's a sassy, fun, rowdy song, and I'm like, oh, this will be fun. But then I ended up writing, like, the riff, like the so I just started rolling with that, and then it happened to be in the same key as the melody I was singing. I'm like, oh, this works for this song, and then that's how Heartless Place came to be.
yeah, oh cool.
So I wrote it about my buddy getting heckled, and yeah. Then the music video is literally a guy getting heckled off stage for an open mic.
Yeah.
We play.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys typically write each song as a team, or does that kind of change depending on the track?
Yeah, it's really spontaneous. Sometimes I bring a whole tune to the table, and we learn it and kind of evolve it that way, or Pete will bring the tune, and, you know, we do the same thing with that. Or sometimes we're just drinking and, like, we'll just spontaneously write a tune together, like all three of us, or, you know, sometimes, you know, my bass player will bring a cool riff, and then we just kind of all hop on. It's very collaborative in that sense, but, yeah, you know, we're all about each other's songwriting. Like, if someone wants to bring a song to the table, we'll totally pursue it if it's, you know, worth our time or whatever, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Someone's gotta write.
Exactly. Who did you work with to record and produce Heartless Place?
So that one, we teamed up with John Angus McDonald from the band The Trues, which was a connection through our manager, who thought we'd work really well together. And I was low-key freaking out because I love The Trues. They're like, if it's not the Foo Fighters, The Trues are also my favorite band. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, like, if you think so, like, sure.
Yeah.
And then we hit it off really well. We went for beers with John Angus, and that guy was just such a slayer. And we just felt like we had a very good common ground of chemistry. And we went over to his house for a writing sesh, and he really liked that tune out of the demos we sent him, and completely helped us make that a single. So it was really cool. Really cool experience.
Yeah. What do you hope your listeners take away from the song?
Whatever they want to take away from it, but I just hope they're having a good time while they're cranking it, really. That's all I care about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I hope they can relate to it on their own form. There's a lot of heartless things out there, so I hope it helps them feel better about those situations for them, I guess.
For sure, yeah. So, about the music video for Heartless Place, who did you work with, and how long did the filming process take?
So, we always tend to work with our good pal Brandon Primer, and he has his company called Primer Productions. We've been working with him for years, and he's just done such a great job all the time, and he's so talented. He's got a good eye, he's got good ideas, and we just kind of throw him raw ideas all the time, and he makes them all amazing. We actually filmed 3 music videos in 2 days this year. So we did the Need You Now video, and then we did the Heartless Place video, and then we have another single coming out, and we did all 3 of those videos in like 2 days.
Wow.
So, just because COVID was such a weird time, we didn't know what to do, and we said, let's just get it done now before any. I think it was like a lockdown was lifted when we did them, and so we just said, screw it, like, let's just get this done now just in case we get screwed again. And I mean, yeah, we did. We got screwed again with the third one, so good thing we did that.
Yeah, good thing you're prepared. Yeah. So we're just going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone a 2021 Revive the Rose single. We just talked about it earlier. Heartless Place is a track about feeling disenchanted with the world. anyone just joining us, this is Hot Shots On Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Andy Colonico, the lead singer of Welland classic rock band Revive the Rose, and owner of Snare Guy Records. So speaking of Snare Guy, you started a label, which is like quite a large project to take on. How did that conversation start?
Well, I've always, like, just liked the idea of, like, a community with a label. Like, you know, I saw a lot of cool labels like Dynalone Records. What a cool vibe, you know? Like, I don't know. It's really cool to see people just helping each other out in that sense and just building community, you know? And I really liked that. And I always been super passionate, you know, for other artists, like, you know? And I'm always a guy that just loves to lend a hand whenever I can, you know, and I, you know, it's been ground up for me, honestly. I've had people, you know, help me get on certain shows and whatnot, but when it comes to, like, the meat and potatoes and, like, the brains behind the industry, I've had to do a lot of it on my own. It's not in marketing, like, everything, like, game planning. Like, I went to business school, which opened up a lot of avenues, so, like, I just finally felt it was time where I could just at least plant the seed of starting a label management company. So there's two sides to Snare Guy. There's Snare Guy Records and there's Snare Guy Management. And I'm more so focused on Snare Guy Management right now, but it's all, you know, umbrellaed under Snare Guy Records.
Yeah.
I do plan to build a bigger catalog when the time is ready. But yeah, I just love helping artists, and there's a lot of artists out there that just that I believe in that don't always know, you know, kind of what to do as the next step, right? And I'm just constantly grinding all the time, and it's kind of fun for me. It's just really fun, especially, like, you know, I manage a rapper, and I never even listened to rap a whole lot until I started managing Conan Doyle, his name is, and it's been cool to, like, study the rap game, like the hip hop, how, like, it's almost like it's similar, but it's very different in the way you grow in that. And it's fun for me to learn. I don't know, and I love helping them out. And I really believe in, you know, Conan Doyle. I believe in Gravely James. I believe in the Jailbirds. Those are the artists I'm taking on right now. And I just want to help them out. And you know, whatever. Revive the Rose is essentially just like a giant crash test dummy. I just throw out the industry, and whatever works, then I sponge it in, Snare Guy Records, and I help others out. So it's fun. I like seeing others succeed, and seeing, you know, good talent get heard, you know, and you know, they're like my fam. I love them. I want the best for them. So I want to ensure that I can do the best I can. So
yeah, for sure. Where did the name come from? Does it have to do with you being a drummer?
Yes, actually, it's like the most stupid backstory ever. I was in a high school band called Schreier, and we were like loading in for some gig, and, you know, I played drums for that band. So my guitar player was like off the stage, and I was off stage, and I needed my snare drum. And I told him, like, hey man, like, can you pass the snare? And he's like, oh, like this little snare guy right here, this little snare drum guy. And I'm like, yeah, the snare guy. And I'm like, I don't know why, we just kept, like, we just thought it was the most funny thing ever, and at the time, and then we just kept making, like, a running gag. We're like, yo, imagine, like, Snare Guy Records or something like that, like, and then, like, my other guitar player drew the logo of it, and, like, I don't know what happened, like, it just became a meme, almost, and, like, I just over, like, a super stoner humor.
Yeah.
And, yeah, alas, we have Snare Guy Records now, and I really don't think I should be on that story.
Yeah. It's a great origin story.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. How long did it take to put that together? Because I'm sure that's kind of a big process.
Well, I mean, I've had Snare Guy Records, like, floating around since, like, high school, I'd say, but, like, I never knew what to do with it. And then it wasn't until, like, 2018 when the band started doing really good, like Revive. I started mapping the industry and how it works. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I can definitely, like, start doing this, you know? So in 2018, I'd say, was the true birth of it. We put out our first record as Revive the Rose. We put just the album out distribution wise through Snare Guy Records, just to kind of get it out there and start. And then my first artist I signed was Conan Doyle, and then I just we kept hustling things, and it was just doing really well. And then I signed Gravely eventually, and I don't know, it just started, like, the word got out there, and, like, you know, everything Revive was doing was slapped on a Snare Guy Records, even, like, Bar Down, the NHL song. So it suddenly naturally became relevant to some degree, and now it's just kind of like this little label that could, you know. So I don't know, it's still growing, lots of work to do and lots of learning on my end, but definitely crazy, didn't even expect that to happen so soon. So yeah
definitely. So are there only two artists right now on Snare Guy?
So on Snare Guy Records and management, I got Conan Doyle. And then under Snare Guy Management, I have Gravely James, the Jailbirds, and I do technically have Diz James right now, but Diz James is on a little